ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
यावद्धारसूद्रत्वं शफाद्वारशतं नमः. As long as Vidura played the part of a Shudra, being cursed by Manduka Muni, Ariyama officiated at the post of Yamaraj to punish those who committed sinful acts. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Vidura, born in the womb of a Shudra woman, was forbidden even to be a party of royal heritage, along with his brother, Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Then how could he occupy the post of a preacher to instruct such learned kings and kshatriyas as Dhritarashtra and Maharaj Yudhisthira? The first answer is that even though it is accepted that he was a Shudra by birth, because he renounced the world for spiritual enlightenment by the authority of Rishi Maitreya and was thoroughly educated by him in transcendental knowledge, he was quite competent to occupy the post of an acharya or spiritual preceptor. According to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anyone who is conversant in the transcendental knowledge or the science of God, be he a Brahman or a Shudra, a householder or a sannyasi, is eligible to become a spiritual master. Even in the ordinary moral codes maintained by Chanakya Pandit, the great politician and moralist, there is no harm in taking lessons from a person who may be by birth less than a Shudra. This is one part of the answer. The other is that Vidura was not actually a Shudra. He was to play the part of a so-called Shudra for 100 years, being cursed by Manduka Muni. He was the incarnation of Yamaraj, one of the 12 Mahajans, on the level with such exalted personalities as Brahma, Narada, Shiva, Kapila, Bhishma, Prahlad, etc. Being a Mahajan, it is the duty of Yamaraj to preach the cult of devotion to the people of the world, as Narada, Brahma, and other Mahajans do. But Yamaraj is always busy in his plutonic kingdom punishing the doers of sinful acts. Yamaraj is deputed by the Lord to a particular planet, some hundreds of thousands of miles away from the planet Earth, to take away the corrupt souls after death and convict them in accordance with their respective sinful activities. Thus, Yamaraj has very little time to take leave from his responsible office of punishing the wrongdoers. There are more wrongdoers than righteous men. Therefore, Yamaraj has to do more work than any other demigod, who are all authorized, who are also authorized agents of the Supreme Lord. But he wanted to preach the glories of the Lord, and therefore, by the will of the Lord, he was cursed by Manduka Muni to come into the world in the incarnation of Vidura and work very hard as a great devotee. Such a devotee is neither a Shudra nor a Brahman. He is transcendental to such divisions of mundane society, just as the personality of Godhead assumes his incarnation as a hog, but he is neither a hog nor a Brahma. He is above all mundane creatures. The Lord and his different authorized devotees sometimes have to play the role of many lower creatures to claim the conditioned souls. But both the Lord and his pure devotees are always in the transcendental position. When Yamaraj thus incarnated himself as Vidura, his post was officiated by Aryama, one of the many sons of Kashyapa and Aditi. The Adityas are sons of Aditi, and there are 12 Adityas. Aryama is one of the 12 Adityas, and therefore it was quite possible for him to take charge of the office of Yamaraj during his 100 years' absence in the form of Vidura. The conclusion is that Vidura was never a Shudra, but was greater than the purest type of Brahman. As long as Vidura played the part of a Shudra, being cursed by Manduka Muni, Aryama officiated at the post of Yamaraj to punish those who committed sinful acts. The Srimad Bhagavatam. We are reading of the great quality of those who have surrendered their lives in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna. Specifically, we are reading of the great Vidura. Dhritarashtra was his elder brother. Of all the three sons that were born of the Kuru dynasty at the time, Vidura was certainly the most qualified to be the best and most righteous king. He had possessed all the most heroic and saintly qualities, but he had one disqualification. Although he was born of Vedavyas, the most noble of all Brahmins, from father's side, his mother was a maidservant. Therefore, he was categorized as a Shudra. Although he was the well-wisher of Dhritarashtra, who was blind and misguided, and his best of friends, always giving him the best advice, Dhritarashtra was most unfortunate because he could not recognize who actually was his true friend. In this world, friendships are based on who can give you the best form of sense gratification. You scratch my back, I will scratch your back. And in the name of this back-scratching business, we become good friends. People are married on the basis of giving one another nice sense gratification. I like the way you look. I like the way you feel. I like the way you boost my ego when you speak. Therefore, we should live together eternally. In this way, people are very, very much addicted to satisfying their gross and subtle senses. Gross senses mean the five senses relating to their objects. And subtle sense gratification means the satisfaction of one's ahankar or false ego. People tell you what you like to hear. And when someone is in a big position, people like the favors of that person. So they will tell that person anything they want to hear so that they could get something from them. This is the art of politics. Everything is motivated by how I can get ahead. But you see, a real friend is one who is selfless, one who is willing to speak what is truth
and what is beneficial, even if it is utterly unpalatable to you. This is the type of friend that Vidura was. Actually, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is said, Suhridam Sarvadehinam. Krishna says that I am the well-wishing friend of all living beings. In fact, Krishna is the only friend, because he is the only one who can rescue us from the repetition of birth and death, which is the real problem of life. A friend is one who will stand by your side and help you when you are having difficulty, having problem. According to the Gita, there are only four problems in this world. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, dukkha, dosha, nudarshanam. If you think there's any other problems, you are an illusion. Can you wake him up? I have to practice what I'm preaching. What was I saying? We are thinking there is a problem on so many of these very, very superficial levels of our existence. Dhritarashtra had the problems, my son, my wife, my throne. But according to Krishna, there are only four problems in the entire creation that are worth taking seriously. All other problems are not worth any anxiety because they're so temporary and insignificant and superficial that only a person who has lost track of the truth will be overcome by anxiety by any other problem. And what are these four problems? Birth, old age, disease, and death. And a devotee of the Lord who is working on behalf of the Supreme Friend, Krishna, he is always, in all circumstances, anxious to help people solve this problem. So Vidura, although his life was at risk, it is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Duryodhana, because he was greedy, because he was proud, he was putting so many demands on his father. And his father, what was his victimization? The same victimization as everyone in this world. He was in the bodily concept of life. The only connection that Duryodhana had with his father was that he was his son. He came from his body. Prabhupada calls it skin disease. Because of this skin disease, he couldn't bear disappointing his son. And he was willing to go against his true well-wishing friends, and he was willing to go against all dharma. Duryodhana wanted Dhritarashtra to be a conspirator of assassinating the Pandavas and usurping their kingdom. And Vidura was always there at the side of Dhritarashtra, giving him the best advice, the best information, even though he knew that his life was at risk. It came to the point where Dhritarashtra became so mad and so blind due to his affection for his son that he was directly defying even Krishna. In his name, even Krishna, they attempted to apprehend him, to beat him, and to put him in prison. What to speak of the incredible injustices they had done to the Pandavas, and what they attempted to do to Draupadi, a chaste woman. This was all sanctioned by the great Dhritarashtra because of his affection for his son. And all the while, Vidura was telling him, you are wrong. Your son is a rascal. Your life is being ruined. But, as it is explained in the Bhagavad Gita, bhogaishvaya prasaktanam, that when one is too much attached to material opulence and sense gratification, one cannot hear. The resolute determination for devotion to God cannot take place. If one is too much attached to the senses and their objects and not willing to give them up, even if you hear from the greatest Mahajans, nothing will enter your heart. So when Vidura saw that it came to the point of a major war, he began to chastise Dhritarashtra right in the face of his son Duryodhana, that you are supporting offense personified in the form of your son. His influence is going to send you and your entire dynasty to hell. When Duryodhana heard this, he became so angry that he came to beat Vidura. He told him, if you are not out of here within seconds, out of this kingdom, you will not even have breath to breathe. So Vidura, he left. Although factually, it was as much his birthright as Dhritarashtra's to enjoy the royal palace of Hastinapur. He left. He became a wandering mendicant. He roamed through the jungles, through the forests, into the mountains. He went to the holy place of Haridwar, and there he sat at the feet of the great Rishi Maitreya, and he questioned him in regard to Krishna consciousness. And after all of these great injustices that were done to him, for years and years and years, he was banished from the kingdom by his own brother, who he did everything within his power just to help. After the Pandavas conquered the Kurus, and Yudhisthira was coronated by Krishna himself as the king of Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra, he was so lowly. He was so shameless that after all he did, criminal activities, blasphemy, attempted murder to his own well-wishing, innocent nephews, simply for his sense enjoyment, because he had nowhere else to go, he was living like a kept dog in their palace. And Maharaj Yudhisthira, such a wonderful devotee he was, that he was taking especially better care of Dhritarashtra than anyone else, because he was thinking, how sad my uncle must be that all of his 100 sons are killed. What a heavy heart he must have. And it's all my fault. Just because I wanted to take the kingdom, we had to kill all of his armies. We had to kill his children. Yudhisthira was so humble and so gentle by nature that he never blamed anyone for the injustices upon him. But he always accepted all blame upon himself, even when he was innocent, which he always was. Materialistic people, they never like to accept the blame for anything, even when they're at fault. They never want anybody to know that it's them that is at fault. And if somebody finds out, they will deny it. And the easiest way, the most effective way to deny it, is to divert the attention by putting the blame on someone else. We have seen even devotees, they have difficulty in their Krishna consciousness. Oh, it's because the temple president, he is not a very nice person. It's all his fault. or it's because of this person. We never like to take the blame. Yudhisthira, he was accepting all the blame, although he was perfectly innocent, because this is the humble nature of a devotee. And therefore, although Yudhisthira Maharaj was the king, he treated Dhritarashtra with more kingliness than he himself would accept. And when Vidura heard of this, he came to Hastinapur for one reason alone, to rescue his brother from this abominable condition. He knew now that Duryodhana was dead. Now there was no more evil association to corrupt his mind. Perhaps he will hear my words. You see the power of that association? Just because you accept initiation, just because you come to the temple, you think that that immunizes you from bad association? Take lesson from this story. If you do not keep saintly association, if you are associated with materialistic people and envious people, those too much addicted to sense enjoyment and material opulence, even if you are associating with great Mahajans, due to that attachment to them, you will not hear what they have to say. Vidura was speaking the same words before and after. The difference is, as long as Dhritarashtra was being corrupted by the company of Duryodhana, he could not hear any of Vidura's words. But now that that evil association was gone, associating with greedy people who are hungry for material pleasures in life, Vidura was thinking, now perhaps he will hear. So he went all the way back to that palace just to preach to his brother. Such forgiveness. We see all over the world what types of conflicts sometimes come between brothers. Amongst family members, especially when there's a lot of wealth, when there's a lot of power and prestige, this hunger for money, this hunger for prestige is so venomous that it turns even loved ones into great enemies. When a man and woman want to get divorced, especially in the West, what is the main issue? How we're going to divide the property? Who's going to get the most money out of this? And here in India, even marriages, when parents arrange marriages, one of their main motivations is who they can marry their child to so that they could get the best money. It's not based on love, it's based on greed. It was explained by Maharaj Pariksit to Kali that your influence will be in complete control wherever there is intoxication, gambling, illicit sex, and the eating of meat and the slaughter of animals. Kali said, as long as you're in this kingdom, these things cannot exist. Give me some other place. And Maharaj Pariksit said, wherever there is greed for wealth or gold, you are king. You are in control. And we see how over empire, over money, over property. When a father dies, it's actually a curse when he dies with a lot of money. he dies with nothing, then all the children just work hard together to get by. They might live simple lives, but there's love amongst themselves. But when he dies with a lot of money, they fight like cats and dogs and become lifelong enemies over who gets a little more. This is the material world. In the name of love, in the name of friendship, it is simply greed and lust. So Vidura, he was, although the most gentle, well-wishing friend, loving brother, he was utterly banished right before the eyes of Dhritarashtra. He was stripped naked of his right, of his own property. Although he could not take the throne, he had as much right to live in that kingdom and share the palace and share the riches of the palace as his two brothers. He was ousted and blasphemed. And yet, he didn't care anything except how to forgive my brother and bring him to the lotus feet of Krishna. Such supreme exhibition of forgiveness. He came all the way back only for Dhritarashtra. And he preached to him. And he preached such strong words. Like a kept dog, after all you've done to Yudhisthira, here you are, eating the scraps of food from his plate. You're so old, you could hardly see, your voice is choked up, your liver is disintegrating, your hair is falling out, and all you care about is living in this royal opulence. Do not you know that time is imperceivably stealing away your entire life? And all these precious moments are being wasted. You should surrender to Krishna. You should leave this palace right now and you should go to the forest to perform tapasya. He spoke with such conviction, with such love, with such a forgiving heart that Dhritarashtra was moved. And Vidura explained to him, do not tell Yudhisthira, do not tell anyone, let's just go. Because Yudhisthira is so kind, he will convince you to stay so he can take care of you. Let us just go. I will go with you. I will help you. I will guide you through the process of purification and self-realization in the Vanaprast order, in the jungles. So by the mercy, the causeless mercy of Vidura, Dhritarashtra was saved. And his wife Gandhari, she left along with him. And there they both attained liberation. And it is described here that the great Vidura, after he played this role of being a Shudra, he returned to his position as Yamaraj in the hellish planets. And it is explained here by Srila Prabhupada very strongly that a spiritual master is one who simply repeats the message of Krishna consciousness, transcendental knowledge. He explained, because Vidura heard submissively from Rishi Maitreya, and because he was very anxious to repeat those words to all those who he came in contact with, and because he was a pure servant and lover of God, always selflessly doing God's work, he was an acharya, even though he was a shudra. From the material point of view, he was a Shudra. Being a king is a material position. Therefore, he was not allowed to sit on the throne. But on the transcendental level of spiritual life, all of these material designations are ignored. One must simply see according to one's quality. And throughout the Vedic history, there are so many very, very, very strong examples. The principal follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who he named the Nam Acharya, the Acharya of the Yuga Dharma, or the chanting of the holy name, by the supreme will of the Lord, he could have installed the great Vaishnav Brahman Advaitacharya, or Lord Nityananda is the Nam Acharya. But by his own sweet will, in order to show the world a very, very important lesson, he installed Haridas Thakur, who was born of a family of meat eaters, malechas, yavanas, outcasts, untouchables. And although the caste Brahmins rejected him, blasphemed him, the greatest, the most senior of all Brahmins, Advaita Prabhu, he worshipped Haridas Thakur. When Advaita Acharya was performing the Shraddha ceremony, it is the tradition that the best of all the Brahmins are given the first remnant of Mahaprasad. And because Advaita Acharya was the senior most of all the Brahmins, there were so many Brahmins that came to observe this great ceremony. And right in front of all of them, he gave the highest position to Haridas Thakur. He did not care what anybody else thought. He only cared what Krishna thought. If you please Krishna's pure devotee, you please Krishna. If you please the ignorance of the social customs of a misguided society, you may get some reciprocation on a materialistic platform of life, but you will not in any way, shape, or form get Krishna's mercy. So therefore, he went against all the materialistic conceptions. But he didn't care. And Haridas Thakur, he said, Advaita Acharya, why you are giving to me? I'm low born. I'm the most fallen. You are a very high Brahman, and look who's here. Look at all these illustrious persons. And Advaita Acharya quoted from the Shastra that one who is always chanting the holy name of Krishna, even if he is born in a family of dog eaters, he is considered to be the savior of the entire universe, and he is fit to become guru for all. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Haridas Thakur, he said, I am embracing you for my own purification. This is how God feels for those devotees who have taken shelter of the holy name. So in this way, it is a very striking example that we do not know what lila Krishna is trying to perform through his devotees. On one level, Srila Prabhupada is explaining from two points of view how to see Vidura and how to see all such great devotees. On one level, it's on the basis of quality, not birth. Krishna consciousness. On another level, Srila Prabhupada and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in purport, he explains that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Let me first give you a little reference. In the land of Bengal, it is considered auspicious to be born close to the Ganges. Wherever Mother Ganga flows, it is considered to be the most pious land. And those places that are distant from Mother Ganga are considered impious places. And there is a section in Bengal called Radha Desh. And Radha Desh is considered the most sinful and impure place because it's quite a ways from Mother Ganges. And the seat of the most educated people and the holiest people were all near the Ganges. Like Navadvip was considered highest place, right on bank of Ganga. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Lord Nityananda and so many others, Pundarik Vidyanidhi, to be born in the area where the Ganges does not flow, in impious lands. And it is explained by Kaviraj Goswami, the reason for this is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not want people to think that a great soul is simply by birth. Whether he's a Muslim, whether he's born in a sinful place, it makes no difference. If a person is chanting the holy name and instructing others to chant the holy name, he is to be considered very dear to Krishna. So in this regard, Srila Prabhupada explains that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically sent his eternal associates from Goloka Vrindavan to be born in these sinful places. Just to show the world an example, because he had a special function to perform in this age of Kali Yuga. And he said, similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so merciful that he has sent some of his eternal associates from the spiritual world to be born in the Western countries, in the families of Malechas and Javanas, just so that later in their life, when the spark of Mahaprabhu's mercy would touch their hearts, they would spread the glories of the holy name through their lands. So in this way, although Vidura was born Shudra, we have to see the background. Srila Prabhupada used to say to us often, when he would talk about his disciples, when he would see devotees criticizing another devotee, he'd say, you don't know who this person may actually be. You don't know what Leela Krishna is playing. This person you are criticizing, he may be a great demigod. He might be an eternal associate of the Lord, being put in this situation. So Vidura, it is interesting to understand a little of his background. He is Yamaraj. Most people do not like to think about Yamaraj. Because Yamaraj, as Prabhupada explains here, is the busiest of all the demigods. There's no demigod who has more service than Yamaraj. Can you imagine? For a whole day of Brahma, somebody has to practically sleepless nights because he has such an overburden of work, just punishing and torturing people. Do you know how many sinful people are in this age of Kali Yuga? Do you know how many sins are going on at every second by how many billions of people? And Yamaraj has to keep track of all of it and has to supervise the punishment for every detail of impious work that everybody does. And pious work, to do it. Huh? There's no balance. Somebody else, the demigods and the higher planets, they get to do all the rewarding. He simply has to punish. He simply has to deal with negative things. Anything positive is out of his jurisdiction. But in heart, Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajans. That means he's a pure devotee of the Lord. He's compassionate. He's gentle. He's loving. He has the most tender, kind, and loving heart.
Can you imagine what a surrender it is for him? Why does he do it? Because it is the will of God. Such an example he is. Sometimes as devotees, we don't like to do things that put us in inconvenience. We think, oh, this is not my propensity, I shouldn't do it. My Guru Maharaj, my authorities, they should engage me according to my natural inclinations. Do you think it's Yamaraj's? Do you think it's this great pure devotee Mahajan's inclination to torture people day and night for billions of years? Therefore, in one sense, Yamaraj is the most glorious of all the devatas because he is the most surrendered. He is the most selfless. And his associates are the Yamadutas. They're horribly ugly people who are violent. Yamadutas are generally people who are basically devotees, but who are cruel-hearted and can't control their minds from angry. If you're like that, you might become a Yamaduta. Basically, you want to serve Krishna, but you cannot control your fastidious anger and senses. You become violent. So these kind of people, they're like gangsters. No nice people go to the hellish planets. Yamaraj is alone with these people all around him. And all around he's just hearing screaming and crying of hideous, torturous, violent acts upon conditioned souls. For billions of years. But Krishna knows that Yamaraj, in his heart, he really wants to preach Krishna consciousness. But there's no one to preach to in the hellish planets. No one can hear. Everyone's too busy suffering. Of course, indirectly he's preaching by just executing the will of God. But it is explained that by the sweet arrangement of Krishna, he wanted to give this chance to Yamaraj. So how did it take place? There was a great sage of the name Manduka Muni. He was living in a hermitage in the forest. And he was a very pious and a very loving sadhu. He was a mystic. And it is explained that one time, some thieves, they performed criminal activities, and the police were running after them. And the thieves were thinking that these policemen will never search the ashram of a great sage, so let us hide there. You see how materialistic people like to use the facilities of saintly people? You're supposed to, it is explained that you are supposed to approach a saintly person only for one reason, to inquire submissively into how I can surrender to God, how to purify my life. That's the only business we have, really, to approach saintly people. But common men, they want to approach saintly people for all sorts of material things. To solve all their material problems on the material level. So the extreme extent is here shown by these thieves. They were trying to use the good reputation of this saintly person to protect them from the sins that they deserve to be punished for. So when the police heard this, they came and they searched the ashram and they found the thieves and they thought that Manduka Muni was one of the thieves. So they arrested him. And he went to trial. And he was sentenced to death. And he was sitting in prison wondering, why is this happening to me? What did I do? And then it was the day of his execution. And they put him against the wall. And the mighty executioners had a long pointed lance. He was ordered to be stabbed to death by this lance, where they run at you and pierce it through your body and you instantly die. So he was standing there, and the executioners were just coming at him with the lance. And at the last minute, the king found out that he's not one of the thieves. He's actually a sadhu, a good sadhu. So they released him. But Manduka Muni, he was very much disturbed in his mind. Why did this happen to me? What did I do? Imminent fear of being murdered, being pierced to death by sword. It's terrible pain of the mind. So he was such a powerful sage, he went to Yamaraj and he complained. You are the one that ordains people to suffer. What did I do? I know that I haven't done anything so wrong. Yamaraj said, oh, yes, you did. When you were a little boy, you took a piece of straw and pierced it through the body of an ant and killed it. So therefore, you deserve, by your karma, to be put in a situation of fearing being pierced to death. And Manduka Muni was very much dissatisfied to hear this reply. What? I was an innocent boy. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was just playing. This is too much punishment. This is unfair. Therefore, I curse you to become a Sudra. And then he left. So for a devotee of the Lord, even a curse is a benediction. The Lord always protects his devotee. It is not that Manduka Muni was purposely thinking that he was giving him a benediction. He was thinking he was giving him a curse. But Krishna can even use the materialistic people to serve his higher purposes. And thus, by the arrangement of Sri Krishna, karmana daiva netrena, materialistic people are cast from one womb to another by the supreme supervision of the Lord due to their karma. But a devotee is not because of his karma. Simply by the sweet will of the Lord, every aspect of his life is being conducted. So he came and took birth as a Sudra, but as Vidura, the most great, saintly, and learned of all devotees of the Lord. Just to give Yamaraj the opportunity to come to this world and to preach the glories of the Lord and to associate with saintly devotees of the Lord. So from these two points of view, we can understand that we should never try to judge things by how they appear to our eyes. As they say, you cannot judge a book by looking at its cover. You have to judge a book by looking at its content, what is within it. Similarly, whether a person is black, white, red, Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, Christian, man, woman, old, young, literate, illiterate, high birth, low birth, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Chandala, these are all things that we see with our eyes. Do not trust your eyes. You have to see through your ears. What is a person saying? How is he saying? What is he doing? We hear through the scripture, from God, and on the basis of what God has said, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, we must evaluate everything. Not on the basis of our senses, not on the basis of anybody else's senses. Srila Prabhupada went to great lengths to destroy our faith
in the materialistic scientists and scholars. I remember one time in Toronto, Canada. No, it was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. One of the most prestigious scholars of Indian history came to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada saw that the devotees were thinking, oh, we, Prabhupada, we have made an appointment with you, with this very, very learned scholar, the author of so many books, most recognized in the whole scholarly community of Indology, Sanskrit studies, and all of these other things. And the devotees were very much, so fortunate we are that he's coming to our temple. And Prabhupada was disgusted by this. Yes, he's probably the best Sanskrit scholar in the world, probably better than most Indian Sanskrit scholars. But it was a profession. He was not a devotee. So this person said to Prabhupada, he came with many of his students, who practically worshipped him. And Prabhupada wanted to set a very important lesson for his disciples. He could have acted very politely with this man. At first he did. Yes, he greeted him with the honorable reception of any guest that comes to your home. And then this man said, Swamiji, I have studied the commentaries of all the great acharyas. Why are there so many inconsistencies in the conclusions of the acharyas? Srila Prabhupada looked at him and said, there are no inconsistencies in the commentaries of the acharyas. The only inconsistency is in you. Because you have not humbled yourself to a bona fide spiritual master. All of your academic knowledge is simply useless. It's nothing but a burden. Unless you are submissive to the great souls, you cannot understand anything. And he said, and you are teaching Vedanta? And you have not humbled yourself before a bona fide guru? You, my dear sir, are a cheater. And you are cheating all these young, innocent people. Get out of this room. I can't stand seeing the sight of such a cheater. And he turned to Brahmananda and said, get him out of here. He deal with him like he didn't have to. He definitely burned the bridges behind as far as that type of communication. He wanted to make a strong point to his disciples. Not that you should treat people like this, but I want you to know for sure that you can't judge with your eyes. Prabhupada, he had series of morning walks where he just discussed the illusion of the scientists, the materialistic scientists. Because we are so brainwashed in this society to put our faith in these types of people. And we'll trust what God says in the scripture if it's confirmed by the scientists. Huh? But if Krishna says something that contradicts what the scientists say, then we have to take what Krishna says with a grain of salt. Maybe it's symbolic, but it cannot be true because it is not confirmed by our sense perception and by the sense perception of other authorities. Therefore, we should not see with our eyes, we should see with our ears. The only way to see the truth, Krishna explains, tad vidhi pranipate na pariprasnena sevaya upadekshantite jnanam jnaninastatvadarshana. Krishna says, if you want to know the truth, you must approach a bona fide guru. You must inquire submissively. And you must render service. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. Nobody else. Therefore, we only take one quality serious. how a person is submissive to Guru and Krishna. If he has those qualities, we honor him with all the greatest respect. If he has every other quality but that, we may officially give good honor. But in our hearts, we cannot take it seriously. Because the only way to God is through submissiveness, through humbling yourself before the Guru and the Vaishnavas. One who takes the position of a humble servant of the Vaishnavas, who is willing to admit that I'm wrong, I know nothing, my Guru and the Vaishnavas, they know everything. Such a person, from the bottom in the core of our heart, we will worship, honor, and respect him. Anyone who does not have that quality, officially we will give honor. Or we'll try to help that person come up. But in our hearts, we cannot take seriously any other qualification. Because everything except submissiveness to Krishna and his representative, everything else is material. Everything. To take shelter. To surrender. Means to become like Arjuna. I know nothing, Krishna. Please save me. When the great devotees speak, they never speak on the basis of what they know. They speak on the basis of being a humble messenger by distributing the message of those who do know. It's not my knowledge. This is the way the great devotees think. He never thinks this is my knowledge, never presents it as his own knowledge. One newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada, "Are you perfect?" Prabhupada said, "I am not perfect. But the words of my Guru Maharaj are perfect. And because I am only repeating them as a humble messenger, everything I say is perfect. By his grace, not by mine." This is the real saint. Not one who performs all little trivial miracles to try to prove that I am perfect, I am God. No. Foolish people, they will take these things seriously. They will be impressed. Devotees are not impressed by these things. One mystic yogi performed miracles to Prabhupada, and his disciples were thinking, "Oh my God, this person's really a yogi. He really can do all these miracles. We can't do these things." They were impressed. Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Why don't you give up all your nonsense and surrender to Krishna? I'm not impressed by all this nonsense." Huh? Those who understand the truth, they are only impressed by that humble, submissive attitude of service. And this is the most exalted quality being illustrated by Vidura. Is there any questions? Yes.
We are supposed not to have association of bad people or non-devotees. Mm-hmm. During our regular life, we are forced to deal with bad people.
But how do you associate? Are you like Dhritarashtra? Do you take part in their sinful activities? Do you become overwhelmed by their greed? Do you take part in those things? If you do, then to some extent you will become like Dhritarashtra. The message of Godhead will not penetrate your heart. But even Vidura was associating with Duryodhana, right? Dhritarashtra and Vidura were both associating with Duryodhana. The difference is, Dhritarashtra was associating with him, and Vidura was preaching to him. Dhritarashtra was allowing Duryodhana to pull him down, and Vidura was trying to pull the both of them up. So if you have social life and begin to take pleasures and enjoyments in the association of such people, then it will be the great stumbling block to your spiritual advancement. But if simply out of duty you're in the company of such people, but you are always strict in your principles, you never compromise your principles, and you're always trying to bring them up by whatever way you can, then you're not associating with them in that way. If your friends play cards, and by their social pressure they force you to gamble, then you're associating with them. But if you tell them, you should give up this gambling, it's all nonsense, I'm going to the temple. Even if you're family members, then there's no contamination. We don't share the pleasurable moments of our life with the sinful activities of such people. That is the difference. Yes?
Is there only but one Yamaraj?
There is Yamaraj in every universe. There are innumerable Yamarajas, but there's only one in our universe.
What is the benefit of severe torture as punishment for actions that cause causeless pain? What is the benefit of severe torture for thousands of years for sinful actions that someone performed in this life, which cause other vain entities in a far lesser degree of pain?
How are you to judge?
I'm not judging, but it's an example.
Why do you say that there is? For every action is an equal reaction.
But I've never seen anyone giving someone torture for millions of years. I mean, the amount of pain.
Because when you multiply all the sins that you've performed and all the pain that you've caused upon others throughout your life, it's a lot. For every action is an equal corresponding reaction. And Krishna knows what's best to teach you. You're speaking like a foolish child. If a child runs across the street, the father might spank him, and he may not be allowed to go outside for 1 week. Right? The child always thinks the father's unfair. Any punishment the father gives, it's unfair. All I did is run across the street. The father knows that although you only did 10 seconds of bad acts and you're getting weeks of punishment, it's what you need to teach you properly. Krishna is the Supreme Father. Krishna is the father of the laws of karma. He knows exactly what everyone needs to atone for their misconduct of heart. If you understand that the laws of karma are being supervised by God Himself, directly or indirectly through His agents, then there's no question of questioning according to our sense perception.
Sometimes we see people are punished in prisons for criminal activities after being punished for so long, they just kind of get out of this. There's no benefit in that punishment. Whereas other people would get constructive guidance or counseling to have a more positive outlook on life, they make progress.
Pardon? positive counsel is always there. Krishna knows what is best. 99% of the ardent criminals, they don't change with positive counseling. You go to prison and give positive counseling and see how many people's hearts you change. Huh? Because you've been sheltered in upper middle class America, you don't know what criminals are like. It's all theoretical, pie in the sky that you're speaking. If you had to deal with them, you would understand what works. The problem with the prisons today is they don't try to change people's hearts by giving them Krishna consciousness. But the laws of God are perfect. Why does a father punish a child? He gives him so much positive. But if the child doesn't do it, then the father is merciless. If he lets the child get away with it. Spare the rod and spoil the child. You've heard the saying? Krishna is the supreme and perfect father.
Why does it seem to me so inconceivable of someone who's suffering tremendous anguish and torture for thousands of years? It's like that kind of state of
because you want to go on with your sinful activities and you don't want to have to pay the consequence. Therefore, you don't want to open your eyes to see the sense of it. That is the only reason. One who has faith and trust in God and who wants to follow the laws of God will see the perfect plan of God. But those who simply do not want to surrender will see everything about Krishna as being unfair. Are you God? Can you control your own senses? So, how can you question the supreme controller who's controlling all the universes? Your whole line of thought is nonsense. Do you know how to create the universe? Do you know how to make the planets float in the sky? Do you know how to create all the 8,400,000 species of life? Do you? So how can you, if you do not know how to create, maintain, and destroy the universe, how do you know how to manage it? Krishna is the creator, maintainer, and destroyer of everything. He knows how to manage it. There are certain issues that we have to understand that we are unqualified and insignificant and we have no right to judge God, the Almighty. We simply have to accept that He knows what is best. He knows how to do what He's doing.
I'm not judging, I just don't understand.
But this is how you can conceive. By understanding that Krishna's will is perfect. You cannot understand with your intelligence. Impossible. You cannot understand God with your intelligence. You have to understand God through faith. And this is just what we were speaking about. We have to go beyond the intellectual platform. We have to break through the barriers of our intelligence and accept on the basis of faith. Because God is beyond our intelligence, and everything He does is beyond our intelligence. Let me ask you this. How can you intellectually understand that a 7-year-old boy lifted Govardhan Hill 21 miles around with the little finger of his left hand? Intellectually, show me scientifically how this is possible. You have to accept on the basis of faith. Achintya Shakti, that Krishna is inconceivable, he's almighty and he's great. And he's proven it. And everything we see within this cosmic manifestation is evidence. Huh? Now, some people, they try to explain everything so it fits within our intellectual capacity. Our intelligence has to be situated in such a way that we understand that God is great, and then we have faith in whatever he does. But if you want an intellectual explanation of every little thing Krishna does, forget it. You'll never understand. Krishna knows how to ultimately bring back every conditioned soul. And every conditioned soul ultimately will be brought back. Because you're in the bodily concept of life, you take physical torture to be so seriously. But for the eternal soul, how much torture is thousands of years of physical pain? Huh? How much is it? Until you realize you're the eternal soul, you can't understand what the soul is experiencing. Because we're in the bodily concept, we're considering everything on the basis of the body. But for the eternal soul, which is beyond time, beyond space, which is Satchit Ananda, to be in the dream of this type of suffering, even for billions of years, is absolutely insignificant. And Krishna knows that. But the conditioned mind needs such an extent to finally become ultimately frustrated with material life. The whole purpose of this material existence is to become frustrated with sense gratification. To be afraid of sinful activities. Krishna is not putting us on this world simply to enjoy and suffer. From the point of view of Krishna, there's only one purpose for this material creation, and that's to rectify us and send us back to Godhead, not to be a pious soul. You're thinking that pious, impious. If a person is counseled, he becomes pious. Krishna doesn't care whether you're pious or impious. He wants you to go back to Godhead. Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartan arjuna. From the highest planet in this material world down to the lowest, they're all miserable. A sadhu's point of view, when he sees the enjoyments of Brahma loka, he doesn't see any difference between that and suffering in the hells. Right? That's the way a devotee sees things. He doesn't see things in terms of enjoying and suffering physical senses. A devotee sees someone who is enjoying the heavenly pleasures as suffering terribly because he's forgetful of God. Krishna says, when I show my supreme compassion to my devotee, I take away everything. It doesn't only mean if nothing's given to you. It means even if the worst possible condition is given to you. That is mercy. Huh? The difference between philosophical speculation and mental speculation. Mental speculation is we're trying to figure out whether God is right or whether there is a God. Philosophical speculation means we try to use all of our intelligence simply to fix our minds in faith in God. That is proper situated intelligence that is steeped in deep, deep faith. Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate. Krishna is perfect and complete, and everything he does is perfect and complete, including all of the affairs of this cosmic manifestation. They are perfect and complete. Krishna knows how to revive the soul's original God consciousness according to the rebellion of that soul. We do not know. We don't even know how to revive our own souls. Huh? But Krishna knows how to revive every soul. And that is why he has created this world the way he has. Any other questions?
Does Krishna ever experience any sadness? It's said that all the qualities that are inherent in humans are also...
Krishna's sadness is also a form of ecstasy because it's steeped in love. Krishna is sad to see his eternal beloved servants foolishly wasting their lives apart from him under the dream of enjoyment and suffering in this world. Krishna is just as sad to see someone enjoying the heavenly planets as he is to see someone torturing in the hellish planets. You think Krishna is proud of someone in the heavenly planets who's just enjoying? Not any more than he's proud of the people in the hellish planets. He's proud of somebody who's remembering him and tasting the eternal pure truths of the soul. He's sad for every conditioned soul who is apart from him in this material world, whatever their situation is. But because that sadness is out of selfless love, it's a form of ecstasy. Sadness, which is based on compassion, is an ecstasy. Sadness based on our own frustrated, selfish desires is nothing but pain. Abramabhuvanaloka punaravartano arjuna. To a devotee, they're all hellish. You can make spiritual advancement anywhere. But the question is, are you doing that? According to the Shastras, if in the heavenly planets, most people are just so much enwrapped in material sense enjoyment that when their pious credits run out, they drop down again to this world, then they'll probably engage in sinful acts and go to hell. Huh? So knowing that most people in the hellish heavenly planets today are going to be in hell, and most people in the hellish planets today are going to be in heaven, they're always going up and down due to their attachment to try to enjoy their senses, a devotee doesn't take either condition very seriously. He knows that the people enjoying in heavens now are going to be suffering in hell tomorrow, most likely. And the people suffering in hell today, they might be enjoying in the heavens tomorrow after they burn off all their sins. People in the heavens, after they burn off all their pious activities, they're going to hell probably, due course of time. Up and down, up and down, up and down, the repetition of birth and death. Devotees don't care about any of these things. They are only concerned with one thing. Whatever happiness or distress is due to my previous karma, I deserve worse. Let me just remember Krishna. Let me just take shelter and surrender to Krishna now. Any other questions?
Regarding the incident of Mandukya Rishi, when he was a boy, he killed an ant, and so he was punished for that. I was reading somewhere, I don't remember, but it seems that offenses committed in innocent childhood, in periods like this, are forgiven. The Yamaraj overlooks them. Was it made as a consequence of this incident, or is it?
Krishna is in the heart of Yamaraj. Krishna knows past, present, and future. Krishna guided Yamaraj to make this judgment on Manduka Muni just so that Manduka Muni would curse Yamaraj, just so that Vidura would come and preach. It was all by the arrangement of Krishna. Manduka Muni understands the laws of karma. Just exactly what you said, he understood that. That's why he was angry. He wasn't like Jagadananda, just speculating. He actually understood what's good and what's bad and what's rightful. And he understood that this is totally unjust. That's why he cursed Yamaraj. But Yamaraj made that unjust decision. Why? Because he's a pure devotee. He's just surrendered to whatever Krishna wants. For Krishna's sake, he was willing to make a fool out of himself and be cursed to be a Shudra. Huh? Devotee's willing to undergo anything for Krishna's service. What do you think, Jagadanand? Huh?
In view of we cannot see Krishna Lila, but why we cannot see Yamaraj Lila? So that we can improve ourselves.
We are seeing every day.
I would ask the opposite question. We're seeing Yamaraj Lila all around us. Why don't we look for Krishna's Lila? Huh? Don't you see people suffering in this world? People with mental anxiety, people with physical disease, people with poverty, wars, pestilence, hurricanes, cyclones. You don't see Yamaraj's Leela? You must be a Mahabhagavat.
Offense Master Muni has done. It was a very little offense. On that point he was cursed and all that.
What?
So for every little offense or big offense if we have direct vision, then we can improve.
You see, you don't understand. There's a higher law. On this material level, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, right? But try to understand the extent of the soul's offense to reject God through all of these sinful activities. Huh? We don't understand the severity of what an offense it is for the eternal soul to engage in these activities. Therefore, whatever punishment is quite just, it's perfect. Because Krishna is trying to uproot the ultimate disease of envy in our heart. Sometimes, if a person acts negligently of his body, he gets some sort of an infection and he has to go through massive surgery to get it out. Right? The cure is oftentimes much more painful than the thing in itself. You have to trust the doctor. According to people who know the truth, there's only one suffering in all the creation, to forget Krishna. Ramananda Rai said, to not be in the association of devotees and remembering Krishna is the only suffering there is in all of creation. A devotee does not mind going down to hell and being tortured physically for the rest of eternity if he could remember Krishna. Isn't that what the gopis did when they gave the dust of their feet? They were willing to go to hell and be tortured eternally. They didn't mind if it was pleasing to Krishna, if they were remembering Krishna. Huh? For the soul, there's only one pain, to forget Krishna.
the soul is as much pain in the heavenly planets as in the hellish planet if he's forgetful of Krishna. Huh? It's only the mind and the intelligence that discriminates between the dualities of happiness, distress, pleasure, pain, honor, dishonor. This is all an illusion on the basis of the mind. But for the soul, forgetfulness of Krishna on any level is the most, is the only pain there is. Right? So what is Yamaraj's leela? Yamaraj's leela is to just give people enough to somehow or other wake up. Eventually they will. First they have to be totally frustrated with material life. Until we're exhausted with material life, we can't surrender to Krishna. Nobody has ever done it. Huh? So the whole purpose of Yamaraja's punishment is that you have to be totally 100% exhausted and frustrated with this material world and you only want Krishna. Then and then only can you understand Krishna consciousness and truth and surrender. Doesn't mean you can't use everything in this world joyfully in Krishna's service, but you're frustrated with this selfish, greedy desire to lord it over. So Yamaraj is simply empowered by Krishna to do what is perfect. And this material world, there's so much suffering. Open your eyes, look around. There's wars. Most of the people in this world are fearful. They're fearing their lives from one moment to the next. Huh? We should ignore the miseries. We should feel compassionate for these people. If we want to help, then we will surrender to Krishna just so that we can help others come out of this miserable situation. But ultimately, the only misery is to forget Krishna. That's the cause of all distress. To a great devotee, he sees people suffer material enjoyment. He doesn't see them enjoying. An illusion soul is enjoying material life. A devotee sees if somebody is in... I was talking to one sadhu in Vrindavan, and he was saying, these rich people, when we see how they are enjoying their great wealth, we feel with pity upon them, how much they're suffering. They're suffering so much they don't even know it. They're casting away the most valuable jewel of Krishna consciousness only for these petty little so-called pleasures that are ultimately going to end in great, great anxiety and pain. Yes?
You're saying that one cannot go to Krishna unless it's totally 100% frustrated and exhausted trying to enjoy material life.
Yes. So I don't say it. Krishna says it. Some people do like that, but that is ignorance. Because, no, the only way is to engage in devotional service. Because ultimately, no matter how much you become frustrated with material life, you have to take to the process of purification to get out. We've already gone through. We don't even realize.